Albrignola had the Navy chopper put him down on the landing pad at the emergency command center that had been set up in the Miami Dolphins football stadium. After having been in a hurricane and a submarine for too many days, he was glad to feel the warmth and light soak into his skin. The entire stadium was boiling with humanity, official and freelance, and there was no shortage of units ready to do battle. Starting at the lowest level, there were Miami Police SWAT teams, and at the very top, Delta Force hostage rescue teams. In between, every police unit in the southern half of the nation was represented, with every federal agency from the Red Cross to FEMA. And, of course, the American media smelled blood and was out in full force. The only human Brignola wanted to see was someone he could talk to, but that was highly unlikely in this mob. He also wanted a cleaning team on hand, in case things went very bad for Stryker. Going into the communications tent, he flashed his card to bully a cell phone away from some lower-ranking Fed and walked back outside to make a call.
Barbara!
Tal, I'm on an unsecured line. I'm at the Miami Command Center, and I need cleanup for Stryker. Send me Buck, a dozen of his people, and a full combo set up for me.
Above the adrenaline and sweat of over-anxious humanity, Brignola could smell coffee on the breeze. He followed his nose to the nearby Red Cross tent and grabbed himself a cup.
Oh, Christ on a crutch.
His need for caffeine overruled his protesting taste buds, and he choked it down. It was so weak, though, he had to go for a refill to bring his blood values up to operating levels. As bad as it was, after finishing the second cup, he was charged up and ready to do whatever he could. Exactly what that was going to be, though, remained to be seen. Bolin was only able to work his way through four more solitary terrorists before he'd noticed that the ship was slowing. On a vessel as large as a cruise ship, it was difficult to determine actual speed unless one had a visual frame of reference to judge by. Being deep inside the hull as they were, he needed to get to a porthole to see what was happening. That meant going up to one of the higher decks, thus increasing their risk of being spotted.
Something's going on. We need to go up a deck or two to find a porthole.
That's okay by me.
Spellman was ready for anything that would give him a break from the heart-pounding stalking of the Cubans. He had never been a hunter, and had known nothing of stalking prey before this, to say nothing of stalking humans. Each time they spotted a victim, he hung back as rear guard while the commando moved in on him and took him out. He wasn't making the attacks himself, but it was nerve-wracking nonetheless. Using the routes they'd reconned, the men made their way to the C deck and to a storage room off the movie theater. As with all of the doors on board, it was unlocked. Spellman kept watch by the door, his finger on the trigger of his borrowed MP5 SD, while Bolin slipped inside for a look.
We're pulling into Miami Harbor. I recognize the city's skyline, and I'd say that he's coming to a stop. Okay. We've stopped a couple of hundred yards from the docks.
Do you think he came here so he can release the hostages?
Not a chance. That guy's a terrorist. The last thing in the world I expect him to do is turn anyone loose and hold his hands out for the cuffs. Men like him have a track record of not letting their hostages go until they have what they want.
But what could he want now?
From what he's tried to do so far, I'd say that he wants nothing less than for the United States of America to cease to exist. Barring that, I think he wants to hurt us like the Arabs did on 9/11.
But how?
That's what's bothering me. Considering the situation, there are only a few options he can use, and none of them is very good.
I don't understand.
These guys are into making grandiose statements. They use grand gestures to make their point, no matter how illogical and twisted they may be. And most of these gestures involve killing people. Garcia already has a lot of people on board the ship to expend, and now he has a city full right in front of him to add to his body count. He's got something in mind, and we've got to try to find out what it is.
So what do we do different, then?
We get even more cautious, because now that they've stopped, they're likely to move around even more.
Spellman didn't know how he could be more cautious than they had been, but if the commando said that they could, he'd at least try his best. Buck Green, the Stony Man Farm security chief, arrived at the Miami Emergency Command Center with a contingent of 24 of his black suit commandos, a communication suite complete with comtechs, tentage, and supplies for the crew, and Barbara Price, Brignola's SOG mission controller. Brignola saw his people empty out of the convoy of trucks Green had borrowed from the Florida National Guard to ferry them all from the Miami airport.
Jesus, Who the hell's looking after the farm?
Well, when I heard you were in so deep that you needed help, I went down to the Dewdrop Inn right outside of town, grabbed the first dozen guys I could find, gave them some guns, showed them our perimeter, and told them to be on the lookout for idiots asking dumb questions.
Thanks for coming.
I wouldn't have missed it for the world.
What's the cover?
Everyone's carrying JD Protective Security Detachment paperwork, so we'll blend in with the rest of these feds.
What the hell is the Protective Security Detachment? Did you make that up?
Actually, Aaron did. He felt that if the State Department could have their own commando units, just as good as well.
Did you at least clear coming down here with the man?
I guess you could say that.
Ragnula knew what her enigmatic smile meant. She had simply told the President of the United States that she was coming south with the rest of the Stony Man crew and that he could like it or lump it. She didn't care. Price had never learned how to be politic, nor did she have the slightest desire to learn. He almost envied her. Buck Green reverted to his roots to get Brignola's Stony Man command post in operation as soon as possible. Brignola was astounded at how quickly it had all come together. His communications were in action in less than an hour, before the tent was even erected. A collection of satellite disks and portable generators made it possible to operate without hooking up to the thick bundle of cables that snaked across the stadium. Stony Man didn't often locate in the field, but when they did it with the same practiced professionalism that marked everything they did. Green walked up to report, his old Colt M1911-45 openly riding in his shoulder rig. His black suits were in full combat kit and had a mix of M16s and H&K MP5s slung over their shoulders as they worked. The Stony Man crew was ready to go to war at a moment's notice. All they needed was a go sign.
We have established secure comma with the White House.
Please tell the Chief of Staff that we're operational, but that we have nothing to report at this time.
Done.
We're all set up. You have anything for my guys to do right now?
Not yet. But I want to have half of them standing by, suited up at all times. Work up some kind of schedule so they can launch on a 60-second notice.
How are they going to be transported?
I borrowed a Blackhawk from the Army, and it's due in 5 minutes.
Where's the pilots from?
Spec Ops out of MacDill.
Oh, they should do.
Win Cow Win returned to the captain's cabin after a brief inspection of the human shields Garcia had ordered. He had no real concern for the lives of those people, but he had doubts about the effectiveness of the tactic. As he knew from experience, the Americans tended to get frantic when their citizens' lives were threatened. Since they were moored in enemy territory, as it were, he didn't need to have to deal with the unexpected.
We are well protected, comrade. I doubt that the Yankees will dare attack us here. When do we make our next move?
Our next move? We don't have a next move.
Garcia leaned back in his chair.
Comrade, I don't understand.
As I said before, we have a final move, and it will take place right here. Once it is accomplished, we will have the victory that was denied us because of the storm.
When do we make this attack?
When I see that the time is right. The longer we wait, the more people the Yankees will bring in to deal with me. And the more that are here, the more that will die. Come with me, comrade. It is time for you to see what I have prepared for the Yankees of Miami.
Wynn was very curious about what the Cuban had brought on board to use for his final strike. They walked down the passageway on the main deck and entered the main swimming pool complex. The last time the Carib Princess had gone through a rebuild, the pool had been sunk into the top deck to give the water frolickers full access to the tropical sun they had paid to enjoy. On those rare days when the weather didn't cooperate, such as during the hurricane season, there was a retractable roof that could be extended to cover the pool. After withdrawing from the last oil platform, Garcia had ordered the pool pumped dry and the roof extended to cover it before their arrival in Miami. Since the roof was covering the pool, the floodlights had been turned on to illuminate it. A few Matador gunners were taking a break in one of the poolside cafes, while another squad worked in the bottom of the pool. 5 metal frames that looked as though they were made of welded-up water pipes had been erected in a line from one end of the pool to the other. To Wynn's eyes, they looked a lot like the improvised rocket launchers the People's Army of Vietnam had used as mobile artillery launchers.
Here it is. These are standard 122-millimeter rockets from the Army's BM-21 rocket launchers. When they are fired against ground targets, they have a range of 12 miles. But I will fire them at a high angle over the city. The warheads will burst high in the sky and will have the best effect.
The Cuban almost beamed as the first of a long line of his ultimate weapons was brought out, carried by two men. It was a rocket about 5 inches in diameter and 3 feet long. The warhead wasn't attached. Wynn instantly recognized the rockets and was surprised, as they were nothing special at all. The 122 millimeters had been a standard artillery weapon of the People's Army of Vietnam, as well as their Viet Cong allies. Simple to set up and fire, they had a greater range than a mortar and had worked well for hit-and-run attacks against Yankee base camps. But these were just the rocket engine sections. The warheads hadn't yet been attached. If what the Cuban had said earlier was true, the absent warheads were the heart of his plan. Another squad of fighters entered the pool bearing metal boxes they placed carefully beside the rocket motors on the bottom of the pool. At Garcia's command, one of the boxes was opened and a warhead taken out. The warheads were about the length of the standard high-explosive warheads he remembered from his days as a young Viet Cong helper. What was different was that these warheads appeared to have some kind of plastic sleeve fitted over the explosive case, which went from the base of the warhead all the way up to the fuse section and was about 4 inches thick. The sleeves carried no markings, but Wynn knew that they had to contain the radioactive cobalt Garcia had bragged of having. He had heard these kinds of weapons being called dirty bombs and the poor man's nuclear weapon in the Yankee media. The high explosive would detonate, pulverize the plastic sleeves, and spread the cobalt on the wind, just as Garcia had predicted. As a method of attacking the Yankees, it was crude, but it would be effective, and Wynn had no problem with them being used. What he had a problem with was that the Cuban had yet to mention how he or any of the other Matador operatives were going to escape the devastation they would cause. He had dedicated his life to the people's struggle to free the world from the clutches of Yankee imperialism, but he wasn't a fanatic like the Cuban. Should it come his time to die for his cause, he had no problem with that, but he had no intention of throwing his life away when he could do more for the struggle by staying alive.
And I assume that we escape in the panic that follows the attack?
You might say that.
Wynn decided to examine the survival gear on board the ship more closely and to start planning his own escape. He had no intention of going down with the mad Cuban. Bolin was right about there being more terrorists on the move now that the cruise ship had halted. In fact, they were trapped in their storage room by the traffic in the passageway as more hostages were moved onto the deck to reinforce the ring of human shields as Garcia had ordered. Spellman was taking a turn at peering around the side of the porthole when he spotted a familiar figure.
Oh God, that's Mary!
Bolin looked and saw the pleasant-looking woman who had been with Spellman in Cancun. She was standing at the railing looking outward.
Can she swim?
I don't know. We weren't together that long before the terrorists took over, and... well, after that happened, we kind of didn't have a chance to talk about anything but that.
Just an idea. It's a relatively short swim to the docks, but I need someone who could make it most of the way to avoid getting shot.
When Spellman started for the porthole, Bolin took his arm.
Don't. Even if you can get her attention, it's not going to do either of you any good right now.
We've got to do something to help those people.
We will.
Bolin and Spellman were heading back down to D-Deck when they heard the scuffle ahead of them in the dimly lit passageway. They raced to a corner and peered around it.
You fucker! You think you're a hero, pretty boy?
The hostage slumped to the floor, and the terrorist lifted his AK to deliver a blow to the man's head. A round from Bolin's silenced 93R took the Cuban in the side of the head. The terrorist slumped to the deck, half covering the body of the passenger. The American abruptly shoved the corpse off him.
Asshole!
You okay?
I'm fine. Who are you two guys anyway?
Bolin helped the ex-hostage to his feet. The man wiped blood from his mouth and forehead. Bolin met his eyes squarely. The man eyeballed Bolin's hardware and combat suit. Not quite the sort of thing a man who just happened to get trapped on a hijacked ship would wear. But he wasn't going to complain about the deception. He was alive, and this guy, whoever he was, had saved his life.
Let's just say that we got trapped in here and decided to see if there was anything we could do to get this situation changed around.
Can you get us off this ship?
Not right now.
If I'm not going to be leaving anytime soon, can I have that? I know how to use the AK-47. I was an army doctor back when they still made sure that we knew how to defend ourselves and our patients.
Do you remember where the safety is?
Sure do. All the way up for safe, down one for single fire, down two for rock and roll, right?
That's it.
Bolin handed the AK over to the doctor. The doctor reached down, took the magazines from the Cuban's ammo pouches, and stuffed them into his pants pockets.
As the man said, let's roll.
Let's do it. But I take point. Keep behind me and Dick, and don't shoot unless it really starts hitting the fan.
I've got it.
Can you swim?
Like a freaking fish. Why?
If I can create a diversion to draw the guard's attention, can you dive off the ship and swim underwater long enough to get out of small arms range?
I can sure as hell try.
Let's go to the stern of the ship.
As Bolin had expected, only half a dozen terrorists guarded 20 or so hostages on the stern of the Carib Princess. Most of the guards had their AKs slung over their shoulders, and they looked extremely bored. That was going to change real quick, but first he had to brief his pickup team on the game plan.
Okay, here's what we're going to do. My partner and I will clear the terrorists off the deck for you. When we've thinned them out, I'll give you the go. Run straight out, dive off the deck, and start swimming. The guards along the sides will try to shoot at you, so stay underwater as long as you can. Got it?
Let's do it.
You remember the contact name I gave you?
Hal Bragnola, Department of Justice.
Okay. On my count. One, two, three.
Bolin's first silenced 9mm round sang right past a hostage and drilled the guard in the side of the head. Changing his aim point before the Cuban even had time to fall to the deck, he fired again. Stoneman's H&K was thumbed down to 3-round burst, as the commando had told him to do, and he took careful aim at a terrorist standing well away from the passengers. Spellman froze for a second as he watched the Cuban collapse to the deck. Before, he had been a spectator when he'd watched the commando's back. Now, he'd proved that he too could do what had to be done. It was a strange feeling, but he liked it. Even the designated swimmer managed to get off a couple of well-aimed single shots before Bolin slapped him on the back.
Go!
The doctor dropped his AK and sprinted for the railing at the stern. He barely slowed as he hit the rail, vaulted over it, and twisted into a swan dive into the harbor. As soon as he was over the side, Bolin and Spellman retreated back into the ship.
What's going on out there?
There's been some kind of revolt among the prisoners. Apparently, one of them managed to get an AK and shoot his way free. After killing several of our men, he jumped off the ship.
Did he get to the shore?
They do not know. He was under fire, but they have not seen a body.
Get more of my fighters up on deck and tell them that they are to shoot to kill at the slightest provocation. I will not have incidents like that happening right now. My plan is working. And I will not have it disrupted for any reason.
If the passengers are all killed, we will lose our shield and the Yankees will storm the ship.
You are right, of course, comrade. And to keep that from happening, gather all of the women and children together in the main dining room and put them under guard.
May I ask what you plan to do with them after the attack?
What I plan to do with them? They are going to die along with the rest of the Yankees. I want all of these animals out there dead. And I'm not going to exempt the females so they can breed even more enemies of the people. The motherland has too many enemies as it is.
Of course, comrade. That is the only fitting punishment for Yankee imperialists.
There was absolutely no doubt in Wynn's mind now that Garcia was totally, completely irrational and a clear danger to everyone around him. Rather than stick around to see the rockets launched as he had originally intended to do so he could report their effectiveness to Beijing, he needed to get off the ship as soon as he could. Now that the Stony Man tent was fully rigged and the floor laid, Hal Bragnola found himself hanging around the comm center. The fact that they had the best coffee pot made it a prime location. Until he'd had his first cup of radio room coffee, he hadn't realized how much he really loathed the foul brew that Kurtzman made in the farm's computer room, where he usually filled his cup. When he got back, he was going to assign one of the comm techs the responsibility for coffee service.
There's a firefight on the stern of the ship. Someone dived overboard.
Jumped, not fell.
That's a report. Bad guys were firing into the water after him, but no word yet if he was able to swim free.
Let me know when he's recovered, dead or alive.
Yes, sir. I'll put in a call to the medical units and the people down on the docks to give us an immediate callback.
Do that.
Bragnola walked back to the coffee pot for a refill. It was going to be a long wait. After the shootout, Bolin and Spellman managed to get back to one of their hiding places without being spotted. Needless to say, the terrorists were swarming the open deck now, their casual attitude in the wind. Their AKs were in their hands, and several passengers took a butt and a kidney to hurry them along.
Andy!
It looks like they're taking the women back inside.
Bolin joined him and saw women being herded inside by a pair of Cubans. The guards had their weapons on them. If the women were being taken away from the human shield wall, it could be a reaction to their little action that got the doctor off the ship. That changed the location of the pieces on the battle board, but it might work to their advantage, as it might be taking the women out of the direct line of fire. Leaving the ship's bridge in charge of the helmsman, Wynn headed below decks to look for a way out while he still could. As with all commercial vessels, the cruise ship was equipped with the mandatory lifeboats, but a large, slow-moving lifeboat wasn't his first choice for making a quick getaway. As a last resort, he'd simply jump ship, and if he was caught, he would shed his uniform and pretend to be one of the hostages who had somehow managed to escape. That would only last long enough for his name to be checked on the passenger manifest, but it should be easy enough for him to slip away during the process. The problem was that he wasn't a very good swimmer, so a boat of some kind was his first choice. He remembered seeing a flyer on the bulletin board outside the main dining room announcing that the ship now had personal watercraft rentals available in the recreation equipment area. One of those swift, small craft would be a perfect solution to his problem. The recreational equipment storage area was on D deck, back in the stern, and he made it there without running into any of the fighters on guard. The door was unlocked, so he slipped inside to find a dozen two-man jet skis lined up along one wall. If he could get one of them down to the excursion platform on the stern, he'd be home free. Leaning over one of the craft on the rack, taking the cap off the gas tank to check the fuel level, he saw a large frame suddenly fill the doorway.
What do you think you're doing in here, Conrad?
Comrade Garcia asked me to look into the availability of these small craft in case we might need them to make our escape.
It's not what he told me. He sent me down here to keep anyone from using them.
When did you last talk to him?
When the Cuban glanced down at his watch, the Vietnamese drew his Makarov and shot him. Nguyen put his pistol back in his holster and quickly shut the door. He looked around to see where he could hide the body for a couple of hours. Spotting a pile of table canopies, he reached down to take the corpse by the legs when he heard boots pounding down the passageway. Realizing that he hadn't locked the compartment door behind him, he dropped the body. A fighter charged into the compartment, his AK at the ready.
He was trying to escape!
That is not like him. And we have been comrades since Angola.
He said that Comrade Garcia has been acting irrational, and he no longer had faith in him.
I want to see the Comrade Colonel about this. Pablo was the most faithful fighter I've ever known. And I can't believe that he lost his nerve.
I don't think that we need to bother the leader with something as trivial as this. This is the hour of his greatest triumph over the Yankees, and he needs to keep his mind clear.
Take your pistol out carefully, Comrade, and drop it on the deck. Put your hands behind your head and march.
The Cuban motioned with the muzzle of his AK. Wynn obeyed and headed for the door. Bolin and Spellman went down to D-deck to get out of the way of the increased traffic on the upper levels. Even so, there was no great hue and cry or pounding of booted feet searching passageways for them. That meant that they hadn't been spotted when they'd cleared the decks for their swimming messenger and could continue picking off the Cubans one by one. They were heading toward the stern when they heard someone approaching. The two men ducked into a darkened stairwell. Bolin was surprised to see one man in a Cuban uniform with his hands on his head being herded by a terrorist with his AK in his prisoner's back. This was his day for rescuing prisoners, so as soon as the pair passed, he simply put a bullet in the trailing Cuban's head. Confused, Wynn turned and saw two men in black step out. He had no idea where these two had come from. Garcia would have killed him on the spot when he learned where he had been, but he might be able to get past these two.
Man, am I glad to see you guys.
Bolin wasn't impressed by this Asian's English. The fact that he was wearing Cuban black fatigues and had an empty Makarov holster in his officer's style belt belied his smile. The muzzle of the executioner's silenced H&K didn't waver from its target, this guy's center body mass.
He's one of them. I saw him on the dock in Cancun.
Who are you?
I'm Jim Wong, from the Directorate of Operations at Langley, working out of CTC OpCon to the Cuban desk.
Who is the Cuban desk now?
Winston Clarington. He came over from DEA liaison in Bogota last year.
And you're undercover with these people, right?
I got sheep-dipped as a Vietnamese refugee unsatisfied with life in the States and worked my way into the DGI in Florida.
What's Garcia planning to do with these people he's holding?
To be honest, I don't really know. He keeps his plans to himself, and we don't usually know what's happening next until he gives us our orders.
What were your orders when you came here?
Only that we were coming here and that we would strike a great blow against the Yankees.
What kind of blow?
All I know is that he's got Russian artillery rockets fitted with some kind of modified warhead. I don't know if they're biological or what, but he's got a dozen or so of them.
Where does he have these rockets set up?
He drained the main pool on the top deck and plans to launch them from there. Right now, the weather cover is in place over the pool, so the police helicopters can't spot them.
When's he going to launch?
He hasn't said, but I think he wants to suck as many feds in as he can before he kicks off.
What's his move going to be after he launches?
That's the problem. He hasn't said anything about that yet. I can take you up there and show you where the rockets are. Now that you guys are here, you can help me stop him.
Lead the way.
Do you believe that bullshit story?
We'll see how it plays out.
Hal, we just got a message from the trauma unit. The medics down at the dock pulled a guy out of the water carrying medical ID, and they think he's the one who jumped off the Princess.
Is he dead?
Almost. He took a couple rounds, and he's in the ICU, so we won't be talking to him for a while.
Damn!
Whoever this man was, Brignola had a hunch that Stryker had had a hand in getting him off the ship. From the reports, there had been too much firing right before the man jumped for him to have done it all by himself. That evidence was so circumstantial that it would never even make it up the courthouse steps, much less in front of the judge. But it was all he had to work with, and he was counting on it being true. Bolin didn't trust this self-identified CIA guy, Jim Wong, any further than he could keep a sight picture on him. He had the company wrapped down, but his story was too pat, and something felt very wrong about him. Even so, if he could lead him to where Garcia was planning to launch his attack, he could be useful. That Bolin was following his lead, however, didn't mean that he trusted him.
It's one more deck up, but we'll have to be careful. They'll have it guarded.
We're right behind you.
Bolin motioned with the muzzle of his H&K subgun. With a gun at his back, Wynn had no choice but to start up the carpeted steps. When he reached the top, he knew that he would break into the lounge area around the main pool. Wynn expected that Garcia was deep enough into his paranoia to have posted a strong guard over his doomsday weapons. If there were enough fighters up there, it might give him a chance to make a break. Wynn was mounting the last two steps when he realized that the big American was close behind him.
Keep going, and don't make any sudden moves.
Wynn felt the muzzle of a subgun nudge him. When Wynn came out of the stairwell, a Cuban fighter nearest the stair turned, and when he saw who it was, lowered his AK. Bolin stepped past Wynn and shot the Cuban in the head before sweeping the room with well-aimed bursts. As his fighters fell, Garcia snatched up one of the rocket warheads and turned to flee.
That's the guy behind this! Don't let him get away!
As Bolin turned to see what Spellman was shouting about, Wynn saw his chance. Spotting an AK on the deck, he snatched it up and spun on Spellman, who was closest to him. The doctor caught the movement from the corner of his eye and turned just in time to escape most of the short burst of AK fire. He took two blows in the side that sent him crumpling to the deck. Bolin spun to face the new threat and saw Wong swing his AK forward. He dropped flat as a burst of fire cut through the air over his head. Rolling over onto his back, he snapped a short burst at the CIA man. Bolin kneeled beside Spellman and opened his fatigue jacket. He'd taken one round through the side of his abdomen and another, farther up, had broken a rib. Both would be painful once the shock wore off, but neither was life-threatening for the next few hours.
I'm okay. Go after Garcia.
After I patch you up. I don't want you to bleed to death before I can get some help on board.
When you see Mary, tell her...
I'll be telling her that you're going to be okay. Here's your AK. Keep an eye on this place.
Go after Garcia. He took one of the bombs.
I'll get him.
Charging ahead, Bolin saw a sign directing passengers to the main dining room. He had a hunch and decided to check it out. Through the closed glass doors, he saw that the dining room was crowded with what looked to be 100 women and children. Beyond the rigors of their extended captivity, they didn't appear to have been mistreated. They were, though, obviously scared. At least 5 terrorists were holding AKs on the group as Garcia flailed his arms, railing at the hostages. On the table in front of him sat one of the warheads he had seen on the rockets. When the women started moving up against the wall at the side of the room, Bolin had seen enough. He didn't have to know what the leader was saying to know that a massacre was in the offing. With the women moving to one side of the dining area, though, the guards were now in the open. The stage was set and the play could begin. Bolin flicked the selector on his MP5 SD3 down to 3-round burst mode. He The MP5 in his right hand whispered silent death while the Desert Eagle that filled his left bellowed. With only 5 targets to work with, Bolin cleared the room before the last 44 shot had time to echo away. Bolin ignored the hostages as he walked up to the older man he had figured to be the Cuban boss man. The muzzle of his Desert Eagle was unwavering.
It's over.
Yankee Buster!
Everyone stay here. Lock the doors after I leave, and don't let anyone in unless you know they are Americans. I'm going to try to get us some help, but I don't know how long it'll take.
Bolin found only one terrorist on the ship's bridge and dispatched him with a single silent shot from the 93R. The Cuban in the radio room looked up in time to receive the same treatment. Bolin pried the microphone out of his hand, switched the radio to the Coast Guard Marine emergency channel, and keyed the mic.
Any station, any station. This is the cruise ship SS Caribe Princess, presently in Miami Harbor. Mayday, mayday, mayday. Any station, come in, please.
Caribe Princess, this is Group Miami. What's your emergency? Over.
We need emergency medical assistance on board as soon as you can get it here. Over.
Who are you? Over.
Let's just say that I'm a concerned American citizen trapped on this tub. And I'm telling you that there's a ship full of people here, including women and children, who need help immediately. I need some medical teams and a military hazmat unit on board ASAP. Over.
Where are the terrorists? Over.
Most of them are dead, but there's enough still alive that the medics will need a SWAT team or two with them for protection. If you've got any Delta Force hostage rescue team people out there, send them. Over.
Mister, whoever you are, I can't just take your word on this. I'm not sending medics into a trap to become hostages themselves. Over.
I'll tell you what. Get hold of the Justice Department element. I know they're hanging around somewhere, and ask to talk to Hal Brugnola. Tell him that Stryker needs some help over here. Over.
But who the hell are you? Over.
I'm Stryker. Over.
Stay on the radio until I can confirm this. Over.
I'm a little goddamn busy right now trying to stay alive, so get your ass moving. Over and out.
Hal Brugnola was in the barely controlled chaos of the Justice Department tent, waiting to make another report to the Oval Office. The man wanted updates every half hour, even if there was nothing to report. And he had insisted that Brugnola make the report in person, instead of having one of his comtechs do it. Each occupant of the White House had his idiosyncrasies, and this was just one that came with this particular incumbent. From the corner of his eye, he caught something going on at the entrance and looked up to see a Coast Guard lieutenant commander rushing into the tent.
Is there a Hal Brugnola of the Justice Department around here?
Over here. I'm Brugnola. What's up?
Brugnola of the Justice Department?
I just said I was. What's the problem?
May I see your ID, please?
Here.
Brugnola flipped his badge case open and displayed his ID. The lieutenant peered and relaxed.
I got a message here from someone who calls himself Stryker. He claims he needs medics and a military SWAT team on board that ship.
Give me that and get ready to transport the people he wants.
I'll need to get that from my higher command.
Is the president high enough in the chain of command for you? If you want, I can get the man on the phone right now.
No, sir. I'll arrange immediate transport.
Thank you.
Brugnola keyed his comm link.
Barbara, Stryker's still alive. He called the Coast Guard and requested Delta Force and medics.
Thank God. What can we do to get him out of there?
Right now, nothing. He only asked for medics and the Delta Force.
I'll have Buck get some of his people down to the dock.
Go ahead, but tell him to wait for me.
You better hurry.
The man was expecting a call in 10 minutes, but this time, he was the one who was going to have to wait. The Black Hawk touched down on the docks opposite where the Caribe Princess was anchored. Black suits were immediately out the door and taking up a perimeter around it. Brugnola stepped onto the tarmac and saw that the Coast Guard already had several smaller craft standing by at the dock. There was no sign yet of a SWAT team or the Delta Force guys, but he knew they'd be coming fast. Exactly what they would do once they got here was yet to be seen, but he was tired of hanging back, and he knew that Green and his men were champing at the bit as well.
Buck, the man gave us the word to go to work and give the medics cover.
How do you want us to do it?
How about a fast rappel onto the top deck?
If our pilot's from McGill, he should know how to do that.
Get them going.
Everybody in. Let's go.
Evacuating the ex-hostages from the Caribe Princess went as quickly as could be expected with the ship in mid-channel. An aid station had been set up on deck to handle the casualties, and the medics were bringing the wounded out and triaging them before moving them to the rescue boats. Richard Spellman had been tagged and was waiting his turn. Though he was strapped to a stretcher with an IV plugged into his arm, he kept twisting to look at the ex-hostages, searching every woman's face as she appeared, trying to catch a glimpse of Mary Hamilton.
Richard! Oh, Richard.
He turned to see Mary Hamilton running toward him. When a medic moved in to hold her back, she brushed past him and threw herself on the wounded man. She held him in a bear hug that threatened to break the rest of his ribs.
Ooh, ooh, careful!
Oh, sorry, God, did I hurt you?
No, I'm okay.
Where have you been?
There's this man who got on board somehow, some kind of secret agent commando, and he kept me from being killed. Then we teamed up and he started killing the terrorists. And then, when the ship pulled into the harbor, we both started...
Do you want to get married in the hospital, or do you want to wait till you're released?
Whatever floats your boat.
Don't you ever use that phrase to me again.
Yes, dear.
Mac Bolan, Silent Running is a graphic audio production. Mac Bolan is a trademark owned by Harlequin Enterprises Limited, used by others under license. Copyright 2004, Worldwide Library, all rights reserved. Production copyright 2006, The Cutting Corporation, all rights reserved. Performed by Terrence Aselford, David Coyne, Nanette Savard, Richard Rowan, James Konacek, Sonny Lasky, Ken Jackson, Tim Carlin, Casey Jones, Thomas Penny, and Mort Shelby. Additional red shirts performed by The Dead Giveaways. Directed by Bob Supan. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Johan Detweiler, Temeskin Wubna, and Carlos Anderson. The Mac Bolan theme was composed by Chris Rowan. Book adapted for graphic audio by Tanya Perez. Produced by Rick Rowan and Wayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. If you enjoyed Mac Bolan, be sure to look for Don Pendleton's Stony Man and The Executioner, available at road stops everywhere, at 1-800-670-5220, or at www.graphicaudio.net. Keep listening for previews of other graphic audio thrillers.
The following previews are of graphic audio productions rated for mature audiences due to scenes of intense violence and sexual situations.
In the chaotic world of the Outlands, trust is a commodity more precious than water. Lakesh pays the price when he tries to hide Kane, Grant, and the Cerberus operatives from the watchful eye of the Barons.
You're a difficult man to sympathize with. However, you are worth more than even the Baron imagines.
Why don't we make it easier for him to think it over?
Kane, Grant, and the others must enter the belly of the beast if they're ever to see their compatriot again. Untold threats await them in the stronghold of Baron Cobalt.
One never knows what sort of pest will be found scampering through the walls. The only recourse is to flush them out and exterminate them.
Before the day is over, Kane will learn new secrets about old friends and a long-hated enemy. Clandestine truths that shed new light on everything Kane takes for granted.
Questions that need to be answered. And I must answer them now. I lied by omission, but I did not betray him.
I know that. But you're going to have to give him a reason to trust you again.
And a deadly new threat materializes in the dreamlike visions of the Cerberus team as they are cast through the dimensions of the Mattrans device. A threat who has existed for hundreds of years.
You're dying. It's a nerve toxin derived from the VX agent. Absorbed instantly through the pores of the skin, attacking the heart and the respiratory and central nervous systems. The effect is almost immediate, and a 5 milligram dose is fatal. I just administered 15.
Cain faces betrayal, bloodshed, and his own towering rage along the Omega Path. Don't miss it.
Graphic Audio presents a breathtaking new adventure series, packed with non-stop action and intrigue, celebrating the exploits of an unforgettable protagonist, archaeologist and explorer, Anya Creed. Rogue Angel by Alex Archer.
An ancient order tied to the Vatican. A blood fortune buried in the caves of France. A conspiracy of power, greed, and darkest evil. Anya Creed's fascination with the myths and mysteries of the past leads her to a crypt in the caves of France, where the terrifying legend of the Beast of Gévaudan hints at the unimaginable. What she discovers is shattering. An artifact that will seal her destiny. A brotherhood of monks willing to murder to protect their secret. And a powerful black market occultist, desperate to put his own claim to centuries-old blood money. Anya embarks on a high-tension race across Europe and history itself, intent on linking the unholy treachery of the ages with the staggering revelations of the present. But in order to survive, she must deal with the shadowy figures, determined to silence her threat to their very existence. Rogue Angel. Destiny.
If you can't find that hot graphic audio title you're looking for, just head to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD or MP3 disc format. Or, the fastest and cheapest way, download that puppy and play it on any of the many devices that'll play Windows Media. And if you're on the road or just a total computer feeb, snatch up the phone and call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220 or www.graphicaudio.net.